Our next speaker was one of the lead presenters at the 2008 Jacobus Ten Broeck Disability Law Symposium. He is Robert Dinnerstein, professor of law at American University Washington College of Law. There, Professor Dinnerstein directs that school's disability rights law clinic, and he also serves on a number of boards and committees that address the legal issues that confront the disabled. So please welcome Robert Dinnerstein.
Thank you, Luann. Wasn't that a wonderful video? Unfortunately, I have to follow it. But the good news is that I can cut out large portions of what I was going to say and just say, remember the video, because in fact, the video covered a number of the things about Dr. Ten Broeck's work, particularly in the area of disability law, that I wanted to mention. But I do want to earn my keep, so I will give you a few highlights at least. And I also want to acknowledge Dr. Maurer and Luann's very fine work with regard to the symposium that was mentioned. It really was a wonderful gathering of people. And having worked for many years with people, with groups and with people with disabilities, but not having worked with NFB or with groups on behalf of blind people, I just found it extraordinary that they were able to bring together groups that were both disparate at some level, but had very much in common, very common ways of thinking about these very important issues. So it was very exciting for me to look at that and to be there. Looking over Dr. Ten Broeck's writings and reading up on his life, first of all, I must say, I'm not sure there was only one Jacobus Ten Broeck, because even the 1 year of articles in 1965 and six, or 2 years, would put many of us to shame for our entire careers. So somehow, I'm not sure there has been a more productive legal scholar, and certainly not in the civil rights area. What is remarkable, of course, is that Dr. Ten Broeck articulated these ideas that are important to us today in his writings, his lectures, his organizational activities, well before many of the laws that we now take for granted, and which, as you saw in the video that were referred to particularly by Dr. Maurer, Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act, the Americans with Disabilities Act, which may be about to be amended to bring it back to what some of us thought it meant. And most recently, the UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, which came into effect May 3rd of this year. Laws and conventions which his work very much anticipated. So if we had to identify what some of the key ideas that his work brings to the area of disability law and disability rights, what would they be? I think maybe the most important one, from my perspective, is the importance of integration. Integration of people with disabilities into society, as you heard, the right to live in the world. In numerous writings, Dr. Ten Broeck emphasized the move from what had been the old way of thinking, custodialism, to the new way of thinking, integrationism. This is a process which, amazingly, he anticipated and described over 40 years ago. It's a process which, as you well know, continues unfinished, but it continues today. Dr. Ten Broeck was not naive in talking about the importance of integrationism. He understood that many of society's policies, although moving towards integration, were not consistent on this point. Indeed, the entire article about the torts article, the right to live in the world, is precisely about how courts don't get the importance of these social policies and these social developments. And his desire was to make sure that they would begin to get it. His whole approach was against isolation, against segregation, against marginalization, and toward integration and inclusion. A second important theme in Dr. Ten Broeck's work, which is very powerful today, is distinguishing the physical or mental impairment and the social effects of that impairment on a person's situation. As he said, and I will quote from The Right to Live in the World, he really put it quite well. The actual physical limitations resulting from the disability, more often than not, play little role in determining whether the physically disabled are allowed to move about and be in public places. Rather, that judgment, for the most part, results from a variety of considerations related to public attitudes, attitudes which not infrequently are quite erroneous and misconceived. These include public imaginings about what the inherent physical limitations must be, public solicitude about the safety to be achieved by keeping the disabled out of harm's way, public feelings of protective care and custodial security, public doubts about why the disabled should want to be abroad anyway, and public aversion to the sight of them and the conspicuous reminder of their plight. Very, very powerful words. In this way, Dr. Tenbroek both articulated and anticipated what today we would call the social model of disability, the notion that a condition is more or less disabling, less dependent on what it is itself than it is on the interaction between the individual and his or her built environment and social environment. Another important aspect of Dr. Tenbroek's work, which certainly as you read it comes through powerfully, is the importance of according people with disabilities respect, dignity, and recognition of their capacity and their autonomy. Dr. Tenbroek was acutely aware of the way in which society disempowers people with disabilities, including people who are in agencies who are supposedly assisting and helping people with disabilities, perhaps the most ironic aspect at all. As Dr. Tenbroek wrote in another one of his seminal articles, The Disabled and the Law of Welfare, quote, throughout history, the physically handicapped have been regarded as incompetent to aid themselves and therefore permanently dependent upon the charity of others, in short, as indigent beggars. He also pointed out that somehow people without disabilities have taken it upon themselves to think they understand what people with disabilities need, they know what the right way to be a person with a disability is and what the wrong way is, and they're quite prepared to tell people with disabilities about that. Dr. Tenbroek, often with a certain archness, noted that and also understood that perhaps this was a limitation of their imagination, not the imagination of people with disabilities. In this way, he once again anticipates a powerful movement, a movement certainly reflected in your numbers here, and that is the movement of nothing about us, without us, the self-advocacy, the speak for ourselves movement, something which again is very, very powerful. Dr. Tenbroek also understood the resonance, and we heard this on the video, between disability rights and other social movements. It is not by chance that his work had important ramifications for the rights of minorities, ethnic minorities. He did important work regarding the Japanese internment during World War II. He understood the connection between labor organization and organizational work and what happened with people with disabilities. Again, he saw the need for connection, and that's a need, and as was indicated on the video, that we understand is so important. Disability rights as part of civil rights, as part of community, as part of organizational work. Dr. Tenbroek also was one to emphasize equality of opportunity. And indeed, this was a very abundant part of his belief on behalf of people with disabilities, that giving people with disabilities a chance is what people with disabilities wanted. They might need what we would now call a reasonable accommodation from time to time, but they weren't asking for any particular special handouts. And indeed, those situations where society purported to provide those handouts often didn't provide the relief proposed and yet also were disempowering at the same time. He understood that, and his work was very much oriented towards saying, just give us a shot and we'll be able to make our way. And if we fail, and we fail because of our own abilities, that's fine. Just don't tell us what to do about that. Dr. Tenbroek also understood that when we're talking about disability rights, not only do we need to link up the rights of blind people with other disability groups, but we also need to go beyond the borders of our country. He was early on active in setting up an international organization on behalf of blind people. And of course, as I alluded to earlier, we now have a UN Convention on the Rights of People with Disabilities, a convention which I might add our government has not seen fit to sign yet. But there is hope that the US government will eventually sign and ratify that convention, which also builds very much on many of the underlying principles of the ADA. Finally, I want to say that Dr. Tenbroek understood something that in my work has always been of critical importance, and I think the work of many of us who write and theorize in the area of disability rights, and that is the importance of personal experience and the need to link it to solid research, legal advocacy, and doctrinal analysis. Looking over Dr. Tenbrook's academic work and getting a sense of his important organizational work with NFB and other organizations, it's hard to believe, as I said earlier, that one person could accomplish all that he did. But if his scholarship was impeccable, it was the very model of what I would call engaged scholarship. And his opening footnote in The Right to Live in the World may say it best. Quote, "This article is amply flecked with footnotes citing a wide range of formal materials." And parenthetically, I will say here, he's not kidding. It's a 78-page article. It has 426 footnotes. And this was before law reviews got so out of control that I shudder to think what the carbon footprint of law reviews are today. Anyway, his article was certainly flecked, as he put it, with footnotes. But he added, "The views expressed, the author believes, are verified by his personal experience as a disabled individual far more than by all the footnote references put together." I think, in my experience, no amount of reading would have given Dr. Tenbrook the kinds of insights that his own life gave him, and yet he went beyond what those insights were. He used them, merged his overpowering intelligence, and moved them into ways that, as we heard on the video, still resonate today. In conclusion, although Dr. Tenbrook died, I guess, exactly 40 years ago this year, he has had and continues to have a powerful influence on disability rights and disability law. This either suggests that he was possessed of superhuman powers of perception and imagination, or else that his insights, to which he gave such eloquent expression, were timeless, and like many great ideas, were obvious once he articulated them. Dr. Tenbrook has many legacies, including, of course, this fine organization, but one of the most enduring is his continuing influence on the way we think about disability rights. Thank you very much.